Hello, everyone. Welcome to our latest Artemis Live webcast, held in association with the Weather Risk Management Association and our kind sponsors, Descartes Underwriting. So today we're discussing one of the market segments that continues to rise in importance, the use of parametric triggers for insurance and risk transfer. Now, parametric triggers have been in use to manage adverse and extreme weather or catastrophe risks for well over two decades, not least in the weather derivative space and now increasingly across broader insurance and reinsurance markets. And if we fast forward to today, parametric risk transfer adoption is clearly accelerating, helped by more granular and abundant data availability, more advanced technology, and also a growing number of capacity providers who are keen to underwrite risk on a parametric basis. And all of this is really colliding at this point to heighten the availability of a growing solution set. And with climate-related risks driving increasing economic and human impacts across the globe, risk managers and protection buyers are even more acutely aware of the need to increase their financial resilience to weather and climate exposures. So in this Weather Risk Management Association webcast, we're going to discuss how parametric solutions can provide a powerful alternative to traditional insurance mechanisms, protecting against the financial impact of severe weather events and climate variability. So I'm delighted to introduce a very experienced panel today. We have Daniel Vetter, Head of North America at Descartes Underwriting. We have Alain Legesse, Director of Group Risk Management at LVMH. Julian Roberts, Managing Director, Risk and Analytics at Willis Towers Watson, and David Whitehead, Co-CEO at Speedwell Weather. Rather than introduce them all in person, I'm going to let their responses to the questions do the talking, and we've only got an hour or so we'll get right into it. And just a reminder for our audience, you can submit Q&A as we go through the session, and we'd welcome you to do so. We'll probably get to them at the end, and we can run over the hour by a little bit if needed, so do put your questions into the panel. So to begin, I wanted to start by discussing the current landscape for parametrics and also some of the buyer motivations for accessing that form of risk transfer. We're going to begin with Julian Roberts from Willis Towers Watson. And Julian, you've been broking and arranging parametric solutions for weather and catastrophe risk protection for some time. I'm sure it wasn't always the most straightforward of sales, being new to the market, but do you agree that interest in these products is increasing? And what do you feel is driving your clients down this route?
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, great question. Is interest increasing? Yes, it is. I mean, if we can sort of use the metrics of our inbox to that, it's definitely growing all the time, consistently. When we started our weather practice about 10 years ago or so, I remember some sage from wise advice from the market was, that's a really good idea, very interesting thing for you to do, but I hope you've also got a day job to keep the lights on because that won't keep you busy all the time. Well, I'm glad to say that since then, it does keep us busy all the time. So if anything, that is a reflection of demand. But you're right, it wasn't always like that. And people have been interested in this topic for decades, as you say. I remember the first parametric program I looked at was placed in Lloyd's in 1988. So it's been around for a long time. But where things have changed and improved, you referred to this in your introduction, is absolutely right. It's the availability of data. And Dave from Speedwell will fill us in on that. But the immediacy and the availability of those data are incredibly useful. The analytical firepower that enables us to work with that data and some advanced modeling, again, transforms the utility of that data, which is all about solving client problems. And I think probably one thing that has helped hold the hand managers down this route is managing away things like basis risk. So increased sophistication of analytics, application of data, immediacy of those data, all these sorts of things has enabled the solutions that we are now able to develop to be much more sophisticated and to sort of narrow that sliver of basis risk down to a more practicable size and comfort. So that's one part of this. The second side of what is the market conditions we find ourselves in now, a hard market, as I'm sure everybody listening knows about. So parametric solutions are able to step up and step in to bridge some of the gaps that our customers are finding dealing with some of the more intractable problems that exist within existing programs, to fill in layers, to deal with increased retentions, for example. So parametrics can come in and help those things. And thirdly, perhaps finally on this point, I would say increasingly parametric solutions can be used as a proxy for non-damage business interruption matters, which are well handled, and I'm sure we'll talk about this further during this this webinar, are well handled by parametric type solutions.
Yes, so thank you, Julian. So definitely expanding interest, and interesting to hear your first transaction you saw was way back in 88. It's interesting that this is increasing across all sides of the market, including ILS at the moment, the area that Artemis obviously covers. Alan, I'd like to move over to you. Now, you're looking after risk for the LVMH group globally, so I think it would be really interesting for the audience to hear what turned you on to parametrics in the first place.
Yes, glad to share that with you. You can hear me okay, yes? Is that good?
Okay. Yes, thank you, Alan.
Well, it's sort of, I suppose it all really started, as I say, in the spring of 2011. We have a very large retail activity in Japan. It's one of our biggest countries. And it is retail activity, some warehousing, but mostly retail. And obviously there was the famous Fukushima quake in March of 2011. And we suffered significant, not catastrophic, but significant financial loss due to the closure of our locations, we didn't have that many locations in the area of the Fukushima quake, but nevertheless, there was a knock-on effect in Tokyo and Osaka, where we do have large retail activities. We didn't suffer very much physical damage because, as I mentioned, the stores weren't in the directly affected quake locations. But what we did suffer was significant business interruption. And at the end of the day, when we added up the numbers, we saw that we'd lost around 20 to 25 million euros, which is a sizable sum, but not huge, as I mentioned. And only about 10% of that sum was recovered under our local traditional property policy, because the trigger for that policy is physical damage and the consequential BI, like most property policies. And so I had to have explain to my CFO, who's quite a bright guy, but who's not familiar with the jargon and the niceties of insurance product, that 90% of his loss was not insured, because there was not, the BI was not a direct consequence of the physical damage, but for other reasons linked to or triggered by the earthquake. And so then we started, or subsequent to that, he asked me to look at alternatives to see if there were other ways in which we could cover our non-PDBI risk, if you can call it that, with other products and other structures. And at the time I began, and it was a time when we use Swiss Re as a corporate solutions in Paris as one of our partners, and they introduced us to a new product that they had put out in Japan shortly after Fukushima, and they'd got a license for, which was parametric insurance for Japan quake. And we started direct discussions with Swiss Re in Paris, in Zurich, and in Tokyo in 2012. And we did a detailed study with Swiss Re, providing us detailed propositions for parametric cover, which we compared to the traditional insurance market cover that we asked renewal terms for, and also took the opportunity to compare with a cat bond, a proposal from a bank that our Treasury Department worked for quite, and were keen to propose to us. So the result of that comparison is that it took us about a year and a half. And at the end of the day, we did choose the parametric product out of the three products. So we essentially replaced the traditional insurance for quake. We left the fire and all risk policy in place, but we stripped out the quake out of the traditional insurance, and we put it into the standalone parametric cover 100% underwritten with Swiss Re in Japan, and that was in 2014. And we've had that policy in place, and thankfully it hasn't triggered yet, and may never trigger in my lifetime, but nevertheless it's in place and has been in place since 2014, and it's been fairly stable both in capacity and pricing over the last 6 years.
Right, thank you, Alan. It's interesting to hear from a buyer on what actually drove you towards this marketplace. Daniel, I'd like to move across to you, Daniel Vetter. Now, you're building out a US business for Descartes Underwriting, who are a parametric specialist MGA. And I guess you've been in this space for a while. And how do you see the landscape having changed for underwriters and carriers in parametrics in recent years? And is it that client motives have changed, or is it just that we're now seeing much greater awareness of the risk transfer options that's helping to drive an uptake at this time?
Yeah, so thank you, Steve. And again, sound check, you can hear me all right?
Absolutely.
Perfect. Yeah, so, you know, you will hear me build on, a few things that Julian already mentioned. So this may be shocking to a few of you that the underwriters and brokers are going to be well aligned here. So the landscape in the parametric risk space has indeed changed quite a bit over the past few years. And not only for underwriters, but, and Julian mentioned this already, for brokers and buyers. And really the advent of advanced technologies in the satellite radar and ground sensor areas, and the data we can derive from these have really greatly helped us, not only to improve our, analytical and pricing capabilities, but also have allowed us to really build models that can deal with the ever-evolving landscaping of climate risk. Basis risk was mentioned earlier, and I would wholeheartedly agree with that. That basis risk in the context of parametric products have been a concern that has been around for many, many years. I would argue that while we have not eliminated basis risk, because that would be impossible, but I think we have been able to greatly reduce basis risk with, modeling capabilities that we have been able to develop over the past few years. And I think it would be worthwhile to point out here, when we talk about basis risk and look at traditional products, they actually carry a ton of basis risk, particularly in the hard market environment that we're finding ourselves in right now, with the introduction of exclusionary language. That in a sense is basis risk, which has greatly expanded over the past 2 to 3 years. And I don't think this is consistently taken into account by buyers. But so, the awareness of what the parametric market can do, individual products, what they can do, has greatly improved and expanded over the past few years, not only what the parametric product does, but maybe also, which sometimes might be more important, what it doesn't do. So I think that transparency has expanded quite a bit. I would also point out, and Anna mentioned the parametric product he's been buying from Corporate Solutions for close to 10 years or for many years for earthquake. These are, earthquake and wind are traditional perils that parametric products have been associated with. But again, with the advancements in modeling capabilities, the array of available products has expanded quite a bit. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about this at a later point in this webinar. And then, of course, the hardening P&C cycle, which was much needed, which sort of came to the fore over the past 2.5 years, has certainly increased the interest in parametric products. But, and Julian already touched on that, but I would also maybe leave the audience with the thought that we're firm believers that a parametric product is not only something that should be considered or can be considered in a hardening market cycle. We feel very strongly that a parametric product has a place irrespective of the market cycle we are finding ourselves in.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Daniel. And as is your point on people now having a better visibility of what's not included as well as what is included, and that must be helping the buyers to make these decisions more quickly than perhaps in the past. David, moving across to you, you're co-CEO at Speedwell Weather, and your company's been involved in the weather risk transfer and parametric space for a long time. You've been providing services and data and even measurement tools, I believe, as well, to support parametric deals and providing settlement data as well. What changes have you noticed in the market over the last sort of couple of years that support the thesis that interest is expanding and parametrics are now much more accepted?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. You're right. Here at Speedwell, we do have a unique view of the market. It's unique, like what you said, we're a service provider. So we pretty much work with everyone in the market. So that's your brokers, your protection sellers, and even your end users. Now, when we judge the health of the market and where this market's going, we're looking at things such as data requests. By that, I mean data structuring, data for marking the book, settlement data. And we also look at service subscriptions. So what this market is needing currently. We see a couple of trends. I'll touch on a couple of these here. In terms of users of the product, without a doubt, renewables is on fire. We're seeing so much interest from the renewables market. It's really quite incredible. It's primarily Europe, followed by Australia and the US. And what's happening is we've put out some new indices, and we call these our wind power production indices. So it's an index that's based upon the weather, so it's based upon wind, but it's converted to megawatt hours. And we're seeing a lot of use of these products by wind farm operators. So these guys are hedging against not enough wind. But then we're also seeing interest from the traditional energy markets because they're worried about too much wind unexpectedly coming into the market. So that's one of the renewables. In terms of market participants, there's been recent trends. I think, as we all know, over the past decade or so, this market has been dominated by insurance and reinsurance. So folks like Swiss Re, Munich Re, Allianz, they've been out there working this market pretty hard. Over the past year, though, we've seen a lot of hedge funds approaching the market. And a lot of them are sitting on the sidelines right now, but they're investing significant amounts of money in building weather desks, where these guys are planning on taking on weather risk and doing some speculative trading. So that's quite a development. I'm always asked about the geographical scope of the market. As we know, this is a global market. We've already talked about Japan, US, Europe. For the geography, we see kind of a continuing trend, and that's primarily interest in Australia, Japan, and Latin America. And then lastly, in terms of market, where the market's going, variables. So when I'm talking about variables, I'm talking about the underlying weather variables. Early on, this market was all temperature and precip. But much like Daniel mentioned, we're seeing a push towards more sophisticated variables. So things such as hail, river flow, wind and solar power production, ag yield, visibility, air quality, really you name it. People are asking for it.
Great. Thank you, David. So it's not just a case that parametrics are becoming more in vogue at the moment, but they're also perhaps becoming more useful as well and providing more solution opportunities to buyers. So on that basis, I'd like to turn to Alan as the buyer on the panel, and perhaps we could just explore sort of why you feel parametrics offer something beneficial and complementary, and also whether you see an opportunity to expand your use of the products beyond that initial Japanese quake transaction that you've had in place for a number of years.
Yes, I tried to sort of figure out probably the clearest way to answer this question, and I pinpointed three main competitive advantages that I see, and it's just my optic, that parametric have over traditional insurance, based on my experience with parametrics since 2012, as I mentioned. And I've listed three. There are others, and obviously some traditional insurance has advantages over parametrics in certain areas as well. But the three main competitive advantages I see that parametrics have. First, as was touched upon by Daniel a few minutes ago, is if you set the triggers correctly, and it's a big if, because a lot of the work on parametrics has to go into the setting of the triggers correctly, so you get the payment when you need it. So if you get that right, then the basis risk for a parametric product is much, much lower than the basis risk for a traditional insurance product. Traditional insurance does not cover BI and extra expense very well. It only covers BI and extra expense if it's triggered by physical damage. And as business models complexify, a lot of BI is generated by events that do not involve physical damage, disruption, climate disruption or social disruption, political disruption, that don't necessarily result in physical damage, but can result in significant BI and extra expense. So the basis risk for traditional BI is huge and is getting, as Daniel mentioned, is getting larger because the market is tightening. Coverage is contracting, especially over the last couple of years. And so we're getting that divide on basis risk, that gap growing between parametric with a properly set triggers and traditional insurance. The second competitive advantage is trigger certainty. A parametric product, again, if set up correctly, is very straightforward. If the triggers are met, they pay out, period. The term sheet typically is 6 or 7 or 8 pages as compared to 60 or 80 or 100 pages of a traditional policy. And a traditional policy is subject to contract interpretation because it's a legal document. And that contract interpretation is after a big loss. And it's interpreted by two, conflicting parties. When you have a large claim, the parties opposite the table, whether they're loss adjusters or lawyers or risk managers or insurers, typically haven't got the same objectives. There are conflicting parties as far as I can see. So contract interpretation, conflicting parties versus trigger certainty. And then the third is the speed of payment. A parametric product pays out 30 days, 60 days. And basically in the same accounting year as the loss, That is very important for a CFO. Traditional insurers pays out at best in year N plus one, and sometimes for complex BI claims, N plus two. Okay? In addition, auditors do not allow, in most cases, insurance receivables to be set up as provisions in year-end accounts, unless they have something in writing from insurance companies or insurance brokers, and obviously insurers will not put down what is recovered on an insurance claim until the claim has been resolved. So we've essentially got a mismatch between the loss and the receivable in the year after or the year after that. And that's a big plus as far as we're concerned, as far as our CFO is concerned. So those, I would say, are the three main competitive advantages of a parametric product. Going forward, I think the second part of your question regards to the potential for expanding the use of these products. Depending on the pricing, coverage scope, and volatility of the traditional insurance market for cat risks or climate risks, and hopefully the continued positive evolution and broadening of the parametric market, I foresee that we will gradually, as a group, over the next 2, 3, 5 years, we will gradually expand our parametric purchases. Today, we started it with one parametric product in 2014 purchase. We added another parametric product for California quake in 2018 and Caribbean wind in 2019. And as you know, as the market evolves, we might actually add more parametric products to that overall portfolio, as I mentioned. So I think that's probably summarizes what I wanted to say on that question.
Great. Thank you, Alan. So interesting to hear that you will probably look to do more as more opportunities become available to you, and some really good points there on the motivations for buying parametric cover. Julian, I'd like to move over to you and your role of broking weather and parametric solutions. Climate risk is obviously increasingly a topic of discussion in any insurance-related conversation now. What do you tell your clients who are carrying climate-related exposures but perhaps today aren't proactively thinking about how they cover their downside?
Well, you know, it's not such a problem as you might imagine, because, you know, the awareness, the profile that climate risk has at the moment is just so high. Somebody agitating or pointing it out is a climate emergency, isn't it? So it's well understood. But however, you make a good point. There's a disconnect between that level of public awareness and the valuation piece and all of that. We're finding our clients are coming to us for information and for evaluation in any case. So we're soon, of course, going to be seeing, you know, higher climate disclosure obligations placed upon our clients globally. TCFD, of course, is a great example of that. So in any event, there is momentum here, dealing with addressing the subject head on rather than perhaps sort of just waiting until something happens. There is, of course, there's ambulance chasing, which is not something we like to do. In other words, you know, something terrible has happened and then picking up the pieces after saying, well, that's something you should have done about before. But I think, you know, in the moment of sensitivity when things are about to happen or have happened, and then that's a very good moment to start bringing this to our clients' attention. But I wanted to draw one distinction as well, and that is between climate and weather. This may seem a small point, but climate change, of course, is something, by the way, people refer to climate change as something that's about to happen. Not so. It's already happened. We're in the middle of climate change right now. It's a progressive event. It's not going away. It's only going to get worse unless we do something about it, again, as well publicized. But what we are seeing now in the teeth of this transition is a change in weather. Weather that we see today is what, you know, climate is what you expect, weather is what you get. apparently allocated to Mark Twain, that, but I don't think that's true. Anyway, it is what it is. We see weather and increased volatility in weather. And I think, you know, you only need to look around you to see, for example, an increase in wildfires. Change in today's weather is causing an increase in frequency and severity of wildfires. And that's not just in the Australian bush where you sort of think that's where they belong and that's what you'd expect. I mean, we had the worst wildfires in the UK last summer in May. May was the driest May in history in the UK. And we had horrendous wildfires as a result of that. And obviously some of these are commercial, some of these are public land. Similarly, intense precipitation. One thing that a warming world achieves is higher atmospheric moisture, which leads to an intensity of precipitation and therefore an increase in flooding. And again, yeah, you know, we see that anecdotally and you see it in the data. So as if we needed to draw attention to this to our clients, well, we do and we can. But I think it's happening in as a package, as a part of an awareness of the changing environment and the increasing uncertainty of weather. Goodness knows it always was uncertain, but it's getting more so and more volatile. So when it does change, it's changing more rapidly. So there's great data science behind this, the financial consequences of these occurrences are getting ever worse.
Great. Thank you, Julian. Daniel, moving across to you, obviously parametrics for weather and traditional catastrophe exposures are now pretty well established in the marketplace. But when we do talk about climate-related exposures, they aren't perhaps so well measured yet. Have you got any sort of feel from your client base and from what you're seeing in the market as to how big an opportunity these broader climate-type exposures could present for parametric underwriters?
Yeah, so, you know, when you look at an organization like ours, we feel and we see this on a daily basis confirmed that there is a great opportunity to help customers address climate risk, which I think Julian just mentioned that, you know, have been evolving, you know, not only, you know, over the past 2 years, but for many, many years. And so in that sense, you know, the opportunity is there on both, you know, on the side of the underwriter, the broker, and the buyer. And it goes much beyond quake and wind, of course, as we talked about, I think, you know, whether it's hail or river flow or wildfire, you know, the products are out there. But I think, you know, what, you know, one of the items is really getting people to a comfort level on, again, what parametric products can do versus what they can't do. And oftentimes, you know, when we're talking to risk managers, it's and brokers, of course, the comfort level, you know, can be achieved relatively quickly, but that does not include all of the constituencies within the corporate. And, you know, Alan certainly knows this a lot better than all of us, that there is typically a treasurer involved, there may be a CFO involved, there may be a board that needs to be convinced that moving into the parametric space is in fact more opportune than continuing to buy traditional covers. And getting to that comfort level, that you know, that time period of courtship is really, it can take time, and we are certainly cognizant of that. And, you know, while we oftentimes get approached for all sorts of solutions around climate and weather risk on a last minute basis, and these can be great opportunities, and we can certainly, the market has an ability to help, the conversation around the, you know, what a parametric cover does, and as mentioned earlier, what it doesn't do, is oftentimes better placed in an off-cycle period. This is where we are finding, this is where the conversation really, really gets traction in the most optimal way. And really then, you know, back to your question, Steve, really then leads to the opportunity, not only or exclusively for us as underwriters or for intermediaries, but also for clients to address climate risk, to address a pain point that they might have. But it takes a little bit of time to get there. But again, the upshot very clearly in comparison to some of the traditional products that are out there is the high degree of customization you can introduce. And this is where we feel very, very strongly, we feel very optimistic about our ability and the market's ability to continue to help and address areas where the traditional market may have retreated or may no longer be a participant in terms of a traditional product.
Great. Thank you, Daniel. And I think customization is another great point, as that's something certainly I hear from buyers who I talk to who are keen to find solutions that, as you say, perhaps off-cycle, outside of their typical program placements, they can address broader problems with the help of the industry. David, technology and data, it's something that's going to come up repeatedly in this discussion, obviously, and that plays a lot into the customization that's possible. And it's also been a big driver of global awareness of climate risk as well, alongside all of the regulation and reporting requirements we're beginning to see. Do you think that the sort of array of opportunities in risk transfer is only going to get sort of more customizable, more calibratable to people's needs, sort of thanks to technology and data? Do you think we're going to see an expanding range of solutions, but also more targeted solutions?
Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt, technology drives this market from day one. There are a couple of comments on technology, and it really falls into two areas. The first one to talk about is data. Everyone keeps mentioning data, and simply because it's the foundation of this market, right? Without data, there would be no parametric market. I also like to talk about data because I'm a meteorologist, so it's right in my skill set there. Briefly, just a quick run through as to how technology has impacted the market since the beginning. If you look back almost 25 years ago, when this market started, it was primarily a market based around, let's say, 10 locations globally, New York's LaGuardia, Atlanta, Heathrow, Paris Orly, right? And that made sense. That was the data available to the market, and the market was primarily energy traders. But I'll tell you, if you were a farmer in Wisconsin, you were pretty much out of luck. The basis risk between Wisconsin and Chicago is tremendous. So the first round of technological innovation on data was the expansion of surface data. So surface data being weather stations, right? Companies like EarthSat and Speedwell, we put a lot of effort into sourcing data for the market. So data's been observed forever, right? Governments have been observing it. They keep it in dusty boxes in back rooms. But what we did is we went out and we cataloged the data, we cleaned it, and we standardized it. So we were then able to push this data to the market. So you went from a market that was trading 10 sites to now you had access to hundreds of thousands of sites. More sites means less basis risk in terms of the weather. Second round of innovation is with the adoption of what we call gridded data sets, AKA remote sensing. I don't have the time to get into it, but these data sets, in theory, allow you to write a weather contract anywhere on Earth. So it's a powerful technology that's really fueling innovation in this market. The current round of innovation, I call this, and Daniel kind of alluded to this, it's what I would call derived products. So these can be advanced variables such as hail, lightning, you know, not your traditionally observed variables, but it can also be in the form of indices. Earlier, I talked about our wind production index. It's an advanced index that's presented in the language the client speaks, so megawatt hours. If you look at future innovation, in my opinion, I think it's going to be a combination of grid data and hyper-localized observations. So picture a scenario in which you transact an insurance contract on temperature. The next day, a box shows up at your door. You unpack the box, you install the weather station in your yard, and then that station will be used to judge the outcome of the product. The other area, I mentioned data before, just real quickly, the other area would be in supporting services. So things such as settlement data. Settlement data has become more and more important to this market over the past 5 years or so. And to be clear, when I'm talking about settlement data, I'm talking about observation certification in this case. What we're doing in that is we're formalizing the process. In the past, it was a bit of the Wild West. Now it's formalized. That results in greater confidence and a greater ability to sell these products. And then lastly, on the supporting services again, let's call it financial services. So there's a lot of efforts underway in this market to support it with the same tools afforded other financial markets. So think about some of the buzzwords, such as cleared products, central counterparty, margining. These are all things that are currently in the works, and we expect those technologies to drastically change how this market works.
Thanks, David. That was a really good summary of some of the innovation that we've seen. And I'm a big believer that the advent of sensors in everything that we own are going to only help to provide the gridded data sets that you need. And if you're combining them with sort of capital market type structuring and trading, then obviously things become really interesting quite quickly as well. So I do see this market expanding quite a lot over the coming years. Finally, we'd like to sort of move on to talk about specifically what the market can do to help the climate exposed risk manager. Daniel, perhaps I could turn to you first. As climate-related disclosure regulation is looming and we've got an increasing number of entities looking to mitigate assumed climate exposure, and this can be anything from companies such as who Alan works for, through to municipal bonds, which are obviously full of climate exposure in a lot of states in the US. Where do you see the future opportunities to really make a difference here? How can this market help?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the future opportunity is already upon us. Again, we talked about this much broader array of available products beyond that traditional quake and wind parametric policy that's been out there for some time. And so while we don't really have an exact idea where regulations will be heading, I think we should assume, and that's maybe a good thing, that climate regulations will get tighter, and they will put bigger onus on corporates and on us as individuals in an effort to combat climate change. So there, we should have the expectation that there will be greater oversight, and the requirements being put upon us will certainly expand. But we've talked about the customization opportunity you have with parametric products. And when I look at available products today, I'm quite certain that in 12 and 24 months' time, we will have an even broader array of products available. Again, that close interaction with the customer is really, I think, what is key to help address climate risk and regulations as well. And I think Alain mentioned the payout pattern of a parametric policy, and I think this is a really important point that is oftentimes not being taken into account by many buyers or treasurers or CFO. Certainly the comparison to the payout pattern of a traditional, be it the BI coverage part or the physical damage coverage part of the traditional property policy is not addressed when looked at from a corporate finance viewpoint. And also when we consider a claim settlement process as part of the total cost of risk, we're finding that again these lengthy payout patterns of months and at times years, that is simply not considered in a sufficient manner. And you asked about regulations, and if we assume how these will tighten, I think the cost, the burden that will be put on corporates will just increase on that. And I'm a strong believer that parametric products have a distinct advantage, again, over a traditional product, which help address these in a customized way and also in an immediate way, in as much as what we do is the products that we offer as a marketplace and us as an organization, they're customized. They're typically offered in a non-admitted in a surplus lines environment, which gives the buyer and brokers and us as underwriters a degree of flexibility that you don't get in a traditional environment, where an admitted product is just simply is tied to state or country regulations these do not move at the same pace that, for example, a climate risk environment has been developing. And so I think this is really where the parametric product has a distinct advantage again.
Mm. No, I'd agree. Thank you, Daniel. Julian, moving on to you, I was going to ask you sort of how you feel people in your position who are obviously out talking to clients on a daily basis, how can you help to keep parametrics at the forefront of risk managers' minds, but I guess it's more about what can you guys do to ensure that the education continues and that people really are aware of this wealth of sort of risk transfer options?
It's a good point. And it's still surprising after all these years when we do speak to sophisticated risk managers and CEOs and describe how these products work, and they say, goodness me, I really didn't know that was possible. That's really interesting. So that's sort of exciting and fascinating and frustrating all in one go. So definitely the need for education and getting the word out there is critical. I think what we need to get across as a market, as an industry, is perhaps to debunk some of the myths that have surrounded parametrics. And it sounds like a sort of long and complicated word, and therefore they must be difficult to understand and so on. But I think as we've been hearing right across the piece from Alan's experience and the delivery side from Daniel, is that simplicity actually is the name of the game here. Simplicity and flexibility, which let's face it, isn't always a hallmark of traditional insurance products. So I think when we speak to business owners and risk managers and people with that remit, is definitely to emphasise the flexibility, the adaptability that these products have to offer in the face of a changing climate, of changing weather patterns. So these are not stuck in the mud. They change every day when they need to. So we need to get this across as a go-to tool for risk managers. It should be absolutely right in their armory of instruments to think about, rather than, oh yeah, that thing we didn't think about last year type of thing. So getting it up the list. The other thing I think that needs to be debunked is that they're only good for people of a certain size and scale and sophistication. The very simplicity of the way the product works makes it suitable for everybody. And we've got clients in Africa, the beneficiaries of which own 5 head of cattle each. So they are the beneficiaries of a very sophisticated satellite-based instrument which delivers them a product when the rain isn't quite good enough. Now, they don't know that, but the sophistication behind the product is enormous, and it enables the delivery of a solution where a traditional insurance product simply wouldn't be possible, either in cost or technology or all the parts of the delivery mechanism. So they don't have to be large. Obviously, in that case, there needs to be an aggregator of some kind so you can deliver it, because we're not just talking to one farmer. But the point is that these solutions can really touch upon the insurance gap, something we haven't really mentioned here today. But as we know, globally, there is a huge insurance gap, and we always have an obligation to try and fill that. So parametrics really have something to say there, I believe. And I was going to say, finally, and I'm not paid to say this, by the way, but WERMA, the Weather Risk Management Association, who've put on this webinar, is a great place to go. The key players in this industry are already members of it, but it exists to help and disseminate and share what weather risk management products can do. And it's a great place, lovely people, good meetings, and a fantastic place to exchange ideas and learn more. I'm sure that association has got a lot to offer in the continuing development of this market.
Great, thank you, Julian. And yes, you raise a good point. I've been aware of WERMA for probably 2 decades or more and engaged with them in various ways, and they do a fantastic job. And for everybody watching, there is actually a link on the screen where you can find out more about the benefits of joining WERMA as well, and I'd urge you to have a read. David, moving on to you. Again, focusing on the sort of technology side of things, you probably see what might be termed missed opportunities to leverage the growing pools of data we have that are linked to climate-related risks, and I'm sure your company can think of many ways of using the data to help people. But what would you say to those who find the amount of data that's now available perhaps overwhelming a little bit?
Yeah, it's a good point. So I think as everyone knows on this call, understanding one's risk is complicated, right? That's simply a fact. What I'd recommend is make your life easier where possible. So a couple of recommendations here. Firstly, work with a good data provider. That's easy for me to say because I'm a data provider. But the reason you want to work with a good data provider is because they can offer solutions. There is a lot of new technology in this market that a lot of people aren't aware of. So it could be new surface data. It could be remote sensing. It could be weather station installation. So keep that in mind. Talk to people. A good provider is also going to know what works and what doesn't work in this market. So the parametric product doesn't have to be complicated, but certain criteria have to be met. So work with the right people. They know what works. Another tip is don't waste a whole lot of time with free data on the internet. Not all data sets are created equal. A lot of the data that's out there can be misleading, be erroneous. So that's one comment. Second recommendation, work with the brokers and protection sellers. These guys have been in it for a long time. Like Julian said, what'd you say, 1988, I think? So they've got a lot of experience. They know what works. Lastly, much as Julian said, talk to your peers. Wurma is a fantastic resource. Hopefully, in the not too distant future, we'll return to in-person meetings. And these are great opportunities for you to get in there and talk to other risk managers, discuss problems they've had and solutions they've found. A huge opportunity. It's absolutely the best bang for your buck. That's what I'd recommend.
Great. Thank you, David. Some very good advice there for people. And then moving over to Alan again, I think people are very interested to hear about your experience at LVMH and how you've embraced parametrics. And I suppose it would be interesting to hear where do you see the role for parametrics in your risk management and insurance strategy, particularly when it comes to climate-related risks in, say, five years to a decade's time? Do you think it's going to be expanding? Do you think parametrics will be integrally embedded into your supply chain and retailing systems, or what's your vision?
Not sure if I can go out 10 years, but I'll try 3 to 5 years. I think that's probably good enough in the fast-changing environment we live in. So as most people on this call will probably know, we manufacture, distribute, and retail large volumes of luxury goods worldwide. And we have pockets of climate-exposed retail activities in the USA, Europe, and Asia-Pacific. With such exposure, it's not perhaps not a surprise that property and BI insurance is by far, by a long way, our largest program, both in terms of cost of risk and in terms of exposure. That gets a lot of attention on the radar screen of our senior management. And I think the hardening of this particular market, the property market, over the last 12, 24 months has prompted us and will continue, probably has kick-started an effort that will continue into the next few years, seeking to combine intelligently different markets, so both traditional markets, whether they're in Europe, US, Bermuda, Asia, and the parametric market, which seems to be expanding. So figure out an intelligent way to combine those markets in our purchasing of property and cat risks, and also combine that risk transfer with self-insurance solutions that we may have access to internally, whether it's captives, finite risk, or other type of those similar structures. So combine all that together in order to continuously optimize our cost cover efficiency. That's essentially what we do. We have to optimize the cost cover, not just the cost. A lot of people focus just on the cost. It's the cost cover efficiency. It's not always easy to measure, but to optimize that ratio and that KPI. And even at the risk of inversing a trend over the most of my career, which has been the consolidation of insurance program into global multinational programs, and even at the risk of deconsolidating the historic single group global program approach. And I foresee that most of our, I call them exposed cat or climate risks, will in the next 3 to 5 years, as I mentioned, probably beyond is a bit dangerous to predict. Most of those exposed cat risks will be purchased via parametric products, which we will obviously challenge and arbitrate annually or biannually. Thus liberating the traditional insurance program of basically the traditional property insurance program of its major cost and volatility driver. And hopefully that's rendering the traditional property program more attractive to more markets and hence more stable over time.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense and actually fits in well with trends we're seeing in insurance and reinsurance where companies are carving out catastrophe risk to use different types of triggers and finding ways to segment their program into more palatable solutions that give them an overall better cost of risk, as you said. I think we'll move on to some audience questions now, because we've had quite a number. We're probably not going to get to all of them, I'm afraid, for the audience, but we'll try and get through a few, perhaps. First one, I'm going to direct this to Daniel and perhaps Julian as well, as it's a market question. Have you got any idea of the total market capacity available for parametric solutions? Obviously a rough number. I think there's a few buyers in the audience who are interested to know if there's sufficient capacity for their needs.
I don't know, Julian, do you want to go first?
Okay, I'm happy to go first. First of all, I don't think anybody helpful, but two things are true. I mean, first of all, looking back to the early days of this market, it was certainly the case that making any meaningful dent in weather a risk was quite difficult when, you know, maximum capacity of $25 million or something of that kind. That is no longer the case. And Steve, you yourself, I think, said that, you know, there are many players looking into this market now, new sources of capital coming in. So we tend to say, and this is slightly disingenuous, but I think it's true, is that actually the problem is not on the supply side, it's on the demand side, if that's a problem at all. There are an ever-increasing number of players of expertise and of capital bases coming into play here. So that's the case. I have to say also, as a broker, we've never run out of capacity. We've never hit a limit that we couldn't place. And I have to say that has included some eye-watering targets. I say targets because not all of these deals close, but we lined up $1 billion worth of capacity at risk. And numbers not far shy of that have actually been placed in the market as well. So, generally, size of capacity is not a limiting factor, I would suggest.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you, Julian.
Maybe just to build on Julian's point here, I would certainly concur with that. I think there is enough available capacity out there. It depends a little bit on the peril, but again, I think as the market for parametric product has expanded, so has, of course, the available capacity. And we should also not lose sight of the fact that parametric products can have a diversifying factor or impact at the portfolio level for many insurers or reinsurers. And that's certainly, you know, with advancements in portfolio steering techniques over the past few years, I think organizations have recognized that parametric products across a variety of different perils can really have a very positive impact on the overall portfolio composition.
Great. Thank you, Daniel. Question for you, David. Somebody's asking about whether not having a long enough data record is a barrier to sort of newer, more advanced applications of parametric risk transfer. And what are your thoughts on that?
That's always a popular question, and it could be a long answer, but I'll keep it brief. In general, the market likes to work with preferably about 10 years of historical data for pricing. They can get their hands on much more data. It depends upon the variable. You know, there are variables. You get into microclimates with meteorology and basis risk. There are some other variables that maybe the station you want to use has 2 years of history, but there's stations nearby that can use concatenate to make longer histories because temperature is something that is more or less continuous over a long distance. So let's say unique microclimates, unique variables, you're going to have a hard time with that. Not enough data is an issue. We see this all the time with station installations. We do quite a bit of that work. And it's all about you're putting in a brand new station, how are the protection sellers going to price it? And there's techniques. There's a lot that we can do. Like I said, I can go on for a long time on that. But does that help?
Yeah, I think that's helpful. Thank you, David. Alan, we've got a question that actually came in quite early on when you mentioned how you'd looked at the traditional product versus a cat bond proposal versus parametric. And somebody would like to know sort of what was it that helped you to decide to go down the parametric route? Was it advantages from a pricing perspective, or were there other reasons, or was it purely the sort of efficacy of the protection that you were hoping to get?
Well, I suppose I could summarize. It was the best of both worlds, in that we had a product that behaved like a financial derivative, and it was triggered quite clearly, and the payout was quick, and nevertheless was legislated like an insurance product, which essentially is easier to deal with than having to account it as a financial product or a financial derivative. So that parametric product sort of fit the sort of sweet spot. We also discovered that the cat bond, in terms of pricing, they were quite close. The cat bond had a very high setup cost, and were involving the use of special purpose vehicles and stuff, and that wasn't something that was too attractive to our senior financial managers. So, in a sense, we found a product that essentially bit the best of both worlds. That's essentially for basically the pricing difference between the three. We were in the 20% range, so it wasn't a big pricing differential between traditional parametric and cat bond.
Great, thank you, Alan. And Julian, perhaps one for you. Somebody's asking, well, a couple of people are asking about regulators and how they view parametrics, and whether parametrics qualify as insurance straight away or not.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's an emerging one. That very much depends on where you are in the world. And it doesn't necessarily match the sort of level of sophistication. Also, so there are certain countries, I mean, for example, the Philippines and Vietnam have been very quick to jump on with the regulators there, understanding the value and purpose of these things, and have opined upon that and made them regular instruments. In other territories, not so much. There is a certain amount of drafting manipulation you can do to sort of make an insurance product more or less work exactly like this. I don't want to get led too far astray on how I say this, but you know, so careful attention to contract drafting can sometimes assist. In other areas, it's a bit of a blank wall, and in areas, and yet others, there is actually the legislation and the regulation is silent on the subject. So it's emerging, it's coming through, and I would countenance anybody to look at this fairly early on if you're getting serious in a particular jurisdiction.
Great, thank you, Julian. Daniel, I think I've got one for you here. Somebody's asking whether combining different types of insurance solutions is sometimes preferable than looking at one side, traditional versus parametric. Something that you see at Descartes, whether you see people looking to tailor their programs to combine the best of both worlds. And also, can that help perhaps reducing the basis risk somewhat?
Yeah, so we're seeing indeed a medley of different inquiries, and I think oftentimes, and I think Julian would likely concur with that, parametric products are applied as a complement to a traditional product to address shortcomings a traditional program may have due to whatever circumstances there might be. Could be tightening of capacity or shortening of capacity, tightening of terms and conditions, but also parametric products, and we see this quite often as well, can easily replace traditional insurance. And so it's really, I think, again, this is we talked about customization so many times now over the past 60 minutes or so, and it goes back to that ability to be able to customize. And so I would just highlight that it can be a complement, it can be a standalone, it can address higher deductibles or an increase in self-insured retentions. And so I think it was mentioned by one of the other panelists a few minutes ago. It requires that thoughtful approach to, you know, that next renewal of how do we want to tackle climate risk? How do we want to go about it? And is the way we have been purchasing insurance, the way we have transferred risk to the market, is this still appropriate? Does this still make sense? And that's really what we're what we're driving at.
Great, thank you, Daniel. I think we're going to start to wrap things up now, as we are running slightly over time. Sorry to all of the people who input questions that we didn't get time to answer. I will go through them and I'll distribute them to our panelists, and we'll try and answer some for you if we can. Also to the audience, you will be able to view a replay of this by visiting the same URL that you're watching now. If you visit that any time after about an hour after we end, you'll be able to watch a on-demand replay. So I'd just like to thank our speakers, Daniel, Julian, David, and Alan. Thank you very much for sharing your experience with us today. I'd also like to thank the Weather Risk Management Association for working with us on this webcast. It's been great to work with them, and really they are a great organization. And if you're looking for a place to join other like-minded people and learn more about the weather risk options that are available, and also to get involved in some of the discussions and events that they hold, please do look them up. And also thank you to Descartes Underwriting, who sponsored this event as well. Thank you for your support. And thank you to everyone who's dialed in to watch us today. And we all really appreciate you taking some time out of your day. And hopefully in the not too distant future, we will be able to do something like this in person and see some of you in the flesh, so to speak. So thank you all again. Thank you again to our panelists. I really appreciate your time today, and look forward to talking to you all soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.